Hello, everyone. Wonderful to see you here today. Namo myoho renge kyo. Really good of you to be here, to take the time to watch another video on Buddhism. And of course, for a while now, since there's such a voluminous amount of information, very much a constant agenda of Nichiren Buddhism videos. I try to intersperse other subjects, and if you have ideas for that, feel free to suggest in the comments some specific area of Buddhism that you find either particularly vexing or that you're curious about, and you don't feel on a secure footing about what it means. Those are the kinds of things that are great input for all of us in our Sangha, and gives me a great opportunity to do some re-study and some new study, and to update constantly my own vernacular around clarifying the meaning of these teachings, because that's what the teachings have no value unless that's what we do with them. That's how we locate our personal paths of understanding and our Buddha wisdom. So please take the opportunity to air your questions or doubts, whatever, in the comments below. That would be hugely helpful to all of us. On that topic, there are a lot of events going on in the world today, certainly in the country I'm in at the moment, that would have us questions the idea of what is our identity. Yes, it's samsaric. Yes, it's delusional. Yes, it's colored by all the infinite decisions and ideas that we've glommed onto in our mind in samsara to try to identify a self. So yes, as Buddhists, we know that it's a bit of a slippery slope. However, as Buddhists, Nichiren Buddhists, Lotus Sutra Buddhists, we know that in this very mire is our enlightenment. Our Buddhahood exists within this mire, not because the mire is good, but because that the thing that creates the mire, the formation of the mires, is our key to unlocking our detachment from the mire. Rather than have all of the I don't even want to call them obstacles, but all the realities that we face in our personal lives, in our lifetime, is a construct. But it does no good to know that it's a construct if you don't understand how it is constructed. You can look at thousands of houses all over the world, but until you see one built from the foundation up, you really don't understand what that house represents, how it is constructed. Once you understand how houses are constructed, then you can begin to be an architect of your own house. This is very much like the practice of Buddhism. We learn how our mind forms ideas, forms opinions, forms emotions, forms our entire collective of some kind of a support of an idea of selfness. And we transpose that to others as we try to evaluate others in our surroundings, right? So why do I talk about all this? This next Gosho is going to present some information that is not uncommon in the last few Goshos about Nichiren's situation and his place in the lineage of Buddhism. But much more than that, it's going to talk about Japan and the people of Japan and the teachers and teachings in Japan at the time of his life. Why is that important? And why am I individuating that out of what's going on in the world today? because there's a very strong correlation between the idea of country and allegiance and what allegiance means and how we therefore identify ourselves personally, communally, and in country. So if you can open your mind to the idea of questioning what is country, on the one level, you could say, well, what is country is geography, it's earth outside of or above the level of the water on the planet. You could do all of that, and of course, be correct. But country has with it a lot more charisma than that, doesn't it? Country also implies a certain way of thinking. How do I identify then a country? I could stipulate that beyond the architectonics of things, there's a legality of things. And I could say that a country is really only what its definition is. And where do we find the definition of a country? Generally, that's the constitution of the country. Now, that's more about not the geography, but the society, the culture of the country, right? Now, it's not entirely the culture because the culture includes all of the social behavior that it's either inherited or that it puts itself upon. You know, for instance, the United States, it has a constitution, and it is the country that is the United States. However, it sits upon previous cultures whose ideas of unity and egalitarianship went directly into the earth. Whereas you could say the Constitution of the United States is not about the earth at all, except amendments and so forth for like parks and so forth, but they're all conditions of society, relationships amongst human beings. The earth becomes kind of an aside in the United States and in most countries. We have governmental departments to look after those kinds of hard, tangible things, but the Constitution is about human beings. And what is unique, in a way about the United States is that its constitution was a little bit more radical than anything that had come before it because it stood mainly for the egalitarian relationships amongst people and tried to create a framework to keep that egalitarianness from falling to personal interests, personal camps, even culture or religions. It worked very hard to protect the idea that fundamentally the individual should not be put upon by the society to act in a way that was against that particular person. Of course, that's an idealistic idea, right? That assumes that people aren't inherently evil, that people aren't there's a system of laws that lays on top of this constitution, so that it doesn't say if you murder somebody that your rights should be protected to be a murderer. But even as a murderer, you still have constitutional rights. And so addressing that is the job of the judicial branch of government. So I'm not talking about the judicial branch of government. I'm talking about identity. What is a country? So if you're going to call yourself, for instance, a patriot of a country, you are essentially declaring that you are upholding and defending that constitution. And if you want to look for ways to defend that constitution, then you would look to the judicial or the executive branch of government. But the country that you're patriotic to is that document, the Constitution. If you are working against the constitutional framework, then you cannot perceive yourself to be or demand that others perceive you to be a patriot, because you simply are not, just by the logic of what is a country. Now, that's on a larger scale. We're also members of a human race, and we are also members of a community, of a family of individuals. And I state all of those because you should very much think of yourself as a country. Now, as your own country, you operate within the framework of the country that you're in, which is a larger scope, but you are a subset of that country, and individually, you are a country. I say all of this because it points to how we should analyze the way we act amongst ourselves with others. We need to respect others' borders, others' constitution, others' countries, right? So that's a very human, egalitarian way of thinking. And you'll find that this pops up over and over and over again in Buddhism. Buddhism is very much fundamentally egalitarian. Now that I've said all of that, let's get into this next Gosho. And I think you'll see as we go, without my having to constantly point it out, that this is really the nature of this conversation between, it's not a mouth-to-mouth conversation, it's in letters, but between Nichiren and Hakiri Suburo. Hakiri is, you'll find out. Keep it a mystery. But Hakiri has written a letter to Nichiren, questioning him about certain things. And so this is Nichiren's response. Nichiren goes, "In Kamakura, there are humble priests," I don't like that word, but monks, head monks, teachers, "named Chikugobo, Acharya Ben, and Acharya Daishin. Please send for them, show them respect, and hold discussions with them." So, basically, a sangha meeting. "I will explain in outline the important teachings. They are somewhat familiar with the great law that has not yet been propagated in Japan, and therefore you should pursue your studies under them." Oh, interesting. So, he's, whatever Hakiri Suburo has asked him, Nichiren is giving him guidance on how he can further his education on Lotus Sutra Buddhism. These other priests or these other monks that he's talking about are humble, which he's saying they'll listen to you. Please send for them so that you can have a meeting with either all of them or each of them individually, and use them as your guidance, your counselors, your teachers in Buddhism. And on top of their knowledge, because they're knowledgeable probably from Tendai or other Lotus schools and have converted to Nichiren's alliteration and modernized teaching, if you will, clarity of teaching of the actual Buddha way, using the teachings of the Lotus and all of the teachings of Shakyamuni. And so he is now going to additionally send them helpful information to update what they already know about the Lotus Sutra so that they understand how it can be implemented here in the latter day, the Nichiren's doctrine, if you will. "In your letter, you write as follows, quote, as soon as your letter reached me, the doubts that I had previously entertained were swept away. Just as a strong wind blows away the layers of cloud and the bright moon comes into view, for people of the present age, however, whether high or low, these teachings are difficult to believe. That is because the Lotus Sutra promises that those who practice the Buddha's teachings will enjoy peace and security in their present existence and good circumstances in the future. Again, existences here. These are people speaking still in terms of multiple lifetimes. And we know from study that the multiplicity of lifetimes really happens from moment to moment, that all of these lifetimes are simply separate, discrete moments within this lifetime. So we can excuse him for not quite grasping that yet. If this is so, then why is it that the priest Nitrin, that Nitrin, though he calls himself a votary of the Lotus Sutra, should meet with so much persecution? People are saying that it must be because he is untrue to the Buddha's will. So here this comes up again, right? And I mean, Nitrin was put through quite a few trials in his life as the votary of the Lotus Sutra. When he was a fisherman's son, nobody gave two shakes of anything for to pay attention to him. He was meaningless. But when he started flexing his scholarship and what he was learning and saying, what I see here is a very direct line to this Lotus Sutra teaching, the lifespan chapter, and this is how it should be practiced and understood. There were a lot of people who were very comfortable with the old way of doing things, and they didn't like him voicing his opinion. So, you know the rest. He continues, with regard to these unjust criticisms, however, the persecutions I have encountered are due to my karma from the past. There is no need to be surprised at my having incurred the wrath of the government authorities. Now, this is not Nitrin talking. This is Hariki. So, by way of explanation, if you examine the text of the Lotus Sutra, you'll find it. I may be in error there. In your letter, as well. Where did the end quote? Oh, okay. Okay. So, yeah, we finished with Hakiri Saburo's letter. Nitrin was simply quoting it. And now he will, this is Nitrin speaking, with regard to these unjust criticisms, however, the persecutions I have encountered are due to my karma from the past. There is no need to be surprised at my having incurred the wrath of the government authorities. So what Nitrin is admitting to here, and he has done this many times in the past, is that he didn't start out, he didn't wake up and go, Myo Renge Kyo. That came to him over time. He was 30 when he first announced that he was clear on the teachings and chanted Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Plus the fact that Myoho Renge Kyo itself was seen as very sacred for hundreds of years before Nitrin came along. He wasn't the first to announce that. He was the first to take it on, Namu, as the awakening path to his own Buddha nature, and consequently, because of the teachings of Buddhism being egalitarian, that this was true for all sentient and insentient beings, but for our purposes, for all human beings, that there was no discretion or discrimination, that any human being, no matter what their life circumstance, could open their Buddha mind through this mantra, through this teaching, really, through this law, Myoho Renge Kyo. So he's simply admitting that, hey, you know, before I knew this, I was just a human making human errors, and even while I was studying, had lots of doubts about what was the preeminent study and what was tangent and not really usable, or what was provisional and just helping me to understand the next step along the way, right? So all of these things, he's saying, these are my karma. And I had to overcome those obstacles to get clear on what this practice is for me, for my Buddhahood, and how to attain it, right? His Buddha wisdom. By way of explanation, he continues, if you examine the text of the Lotus Sutra, you'll find it stated that in the latter day of the law, when people practice the Lotus Sutra just as it teaches, they are bound to meet many with many persecutions. This is made perfectly clear in the text, and anyone who has eyes need only look to see what is there. Thus, for example, the fourth volume of the Lotus Sutra says, quote, since hatred and jealousy toward this sutra abound even when the Thus Come One is in the world, how much more will this be so after his passing? And the fifth volume reads, it will face much hostility in the world and be difficult to believe. It also states, quote, there will be many ignorant people who will curse and speak ill of us and will attack us with swords and staves, with rocks and tiles, end quote. And it continues, quote, in that evil age, there will be monks with perverse wisdom, or they will be forest-dwelling monks wearing clothing of patched rags and living in retirement. They will preach the law to white-robed laymen and will be respected and revered by the world as though they were arhats who possessed the six transcendental powers, so on and so forth, because in the midst of the great assembly, they constantly try to defame us. They will address the rulers, high ministers, Brahmins, and householders, as well as the other monks, slandering and speaking evil of us. Evil demons will take possession of others and through them curse, revile, and heap shame on us. Again and again, we will be banished. Oh, there goes the battery again. Hold on. Why, oh, why do I continue to forget to plug my little laptop in here? Hopefully, I think that also affects the vocal track, so I'm sorry. I won't know until I edited how poorly the audio is, but now that it's plugged in, I'm hopeful that the audio will be better. My apologies. So, again and again, we will be banished, as it says in the Lotus Sutra. Why is that? Why is that? If something's really true, then why are there obstacles? That's not, you know, let's address that for a minute. You know, Nichiren's going to continue to evaluate this, and a lot of this you've heard before, and a lot of this will be new to some of you. He has some interesting things to say from the teachings themselves, which is why we read these letters of Nichiren's. Because we have to respect his scholarship. He is so well read and understands so profoundly the wide breadth of teachings of Buddhism. Even though sometimes it may seem long-winded, there are always hidden nuggets of insight in the way he chooses to say something, depending on who he's speaking to. Because that's how we are, humans. We experience everything differently. So when we explain things, you've done it. You explain something to someone and you adopt some of that rhetoric with the next person you meet that has a similar question, but you also deviate from it because that person's different. They understand differently. Their interrogatory may be different and send you in different directions as well. The benefit of dialogue. So, but the thing I wanted to point out is, again, keep in mind that we are all countries of our, in and of ourselves, right? So the way we sway our particular constitution, it can be difficult because some things we hold on vehemently. We know it makes no sense, we have a very difficult time letting go of certain things that are very deeply ingrained in our idea of self, our idea today of what our country is, our self country. And so if you can understand that you have deeply held programmed beliefs or ideas about yourselves, and you know that you need to change them, or you may not know, to the degree that you're willing to change them, willing to replace them with a new clarity, a new way of thinking, to the degree that you say, well, yeah, okay, I'll listen to that for now, but I'm still going to hang on to this. You're creating, you're forming your own suffering. So when the Lotus Sutra and Nichiren talks about these obstacles, there are two ways you can look at an obstacle of that sort. You can say, well, I'm just never going to get this. Or, and therefore, since I'm never going to get this, there's a limited amount of value in my learning it. So, you know, I'll insert your reason here. Okay. Is it to be part of a group? Is it just to learn something new? Is it to show off to your friends what you know about Buddhism? Is it, you know, is it not to attain your own awakening? Because that's the other way to think about it. If it's to work toward your own awakening, your own Buddha nature, then the nature of your obstacle is going to feel, you're going to experience it much more deeply, much more violently, perhaps, emotionally, I'm not talking about, but anyway, then if you don't really care that much about it, then that obstacle becomes something that just either you walk around it or you just go in a different direction, or that same obstacle isn't as important for you to overcome. So because you don't put importance upon it, you just, it's an obstacle, but you don't really care to fight it. So, right? So this is what Nichiren is always trying to remind his students, followers, whatever you want to call them, us. This is why he says things like, of course I'm meeting this persecution. Of course I'm meeting these difficulties as the votary of the Lotus Sutra, because as the votary of the Lotus Sutra, I have dedicated Namu my entire life to this Buddha wisdom, to accomplishing my awakening. I will not be dissuaded from it. I will not be derailed or have my attention or my, I won't water it down in any way. So of course, every obstacle I meet feels more severe than for others who don't take it as seriously. That's the nature of everything though, isn't it? So I'm trying to make an understanding here that though in Nichiren's case, certainly because of his dedicated life to the practice and propagation of Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, he is experiencing obstacles that not only he observes, but those who know him observe. And the reason can be pinpointed specifically to his dissemination of his doctrine for the Lotus Sutra and Shakyamuni's teachings of attaining Buddhahood. He doesn't do anything else. But now for you and I, maybe not all of you, but certainly some of you have jobs. You have other concerns in life, relationships, so on and so forth. So even though you may be very dedicated to your Buddhist practice, and I am not saying that in any way, shape, or form you are not, what I am saying is that you have other concerns in your life. But you too will meet obstacles simply because you're practicing Buddhism. But you'll also run into obstacles because you want to be an excellent car mechanic or an excellent software developer or an excellent competitive athlete, or video game player, whatever it is. You're going to run into things that demand of you more than you previously offered or even knew to offer. That's the nature of driving toward a goal. is that you find the things in your life that are keeping you from it. That's just the nature of moving forward in life. If you want to just sit and wait until you turn to dust, well, that's the world of tranquility. Congratulations, you're going nowhere. Your spirit is actually regressing because everything's in movement. Remember, you've heard me talking about inertia. So inertia, you're moving. What you do with that movement is on you. Your obstacle may be to do nothing. Well, you will have a nothing life. So understand that when Nichiren is talking, he's speaking specifically about Buddhist practice. But he's specifically talking to humans attaining Buddhahood. So by extension, by like a boat going through the water, the wake of that teaching touches all our lives at every level. So keep this in mind too. These teachings and what we're talking about aren't distant, hard to attain or other than us. They're directed specifically to our practice of Buddhism. But Buddhism isn't a separate thing from this life. Buddhism is this life. It is just a clear lens through which to see this life. And sometimes we don't like to look at our own lives, right? Some parts of our lives we go, I don't want to talk about it, right? In Buddhism, we recognize there's some things you don't want to talk about, but guess what? It's there. So whether you want to talk about it or not, it's going to be affected by your practice. It's going to be affected by your life. So basically what Buddhism is saying and what Nichiren is saying is make your life the priority. Stop hiding behind all of these things that you don't want to look at and address it. And when you do that, it's not always going to be comfortable, personally or environmentally. Your friends may change, right? We do this all the time. We change our circle of friends when we finally say we've had enough with whatever it is that circle of friends was inducing us to do. Whether it was actively inducing or simply by default. And we hang out with different people when our life changes or when we want to change our life. There's another difference. You know, sometimes life, because we're developing good karma, as you would say as a Buddhist, moves us away from certain friends to new friends that will support this new, better improvement or diminishment in our life. If we let ourselves go downhill, we end up with different friends then too, because the good influences get tired of us and they walk away, whereas other negative influences that for us seem to support our negative behavior now become our good friends and we go down that rabbit hole. But Buddhism doesn't want you to do that. Buddhism says, look, there's the goal, Buddhahood. It's here now. Stop straying from it. Start focusing on it. Start moving your life in that direction. Well, guess what? Your friends are going to change, sometimes easily, sometimes not so easily. Some of them may want to desperately drag you back down and they'll call you all sorts of names and say what you're doing is stupid and so on and so forth. This isn't just with Buddhism though, is it? But certainly with Buddhism being the highest goal of your enlightenment, it's going to be extra, right? So that's what this is about. The Nirvana Sutra, Nichiren says, quote, there are Ichantikas, or persons of incorrigible disbelief. They pretend to be arhats, living in deserted places and speaking slanderously of the correct and equal sutras of the great vehicle. When ordinary people see them, they all suppose that they are true arhats and speak of them as great bodhisattvas, end quote. It also says, quote, after the former day of the law has ended, the middle day of the law has begun, there will be monks who will give the appearance of abiding by the rules of the monastic discipline, but they will scarcely ever read or recite the sutras, and instead will crave all kinds of food and drink to nourish their bodies. Though they wear the clothes of a monk, they will go about searching for alms like so many huntsmen who, narrowing their eyes, stalk softly. They will be like a cat on the prowl for mice, end quote. The Parinirvana Sutra states, quote, "There are also Ichantikas who resemble arhats, but who commit evil deeds," end quote. So he's talking more about the middle day of the law there, but nonetheless, the example, right? There's always evil influences, and evil influences even amongst those who would take on the mantle of being your good influences. Well, I'll tell them I'm one of those good guys, and then they'll do what I want them to think. And you may learn something from them, but it's kind of tainted, isn't it? So you have to be careful who you choose as your teacher. As I've said before, you are your teacher, ultimately. So everything you hear, you have to take into your own life and measure it out. Is it true for you? Does it give you insight? Now, if something's uncomfortable, doesn't make it untrue, right? You have to be the judge of that. Don't be authoritarian. Don't let others tell you how to think. Let others rattle your thinking up so that you can figure it out, give you guidance, give you ideas, but don't drop yourself altogether. Test these ideas out. Do they have merit? Okay. "Now, when I hold up this bright mirror of the sutra texts and turn it toward the country of Japan, all is reflected there without the slightest obscurity." So this is what I was saying earlier. The practice of Buddhism is our way to see clearly what's going on. So back to what I said earlier about countries. Quote, "The forest-dwelling monks wearing clothing of patched rags and living in retirement, who are they?" Right? So he's saying in this examples from the sutras, who are they in our lives? Right? Where do we see the example in our day right now in Japan? Or for that matter, you and I in our respective countries? Who are these people in our environment? "For Nichiren, those who are respected and revered by the world as though they were arhats who possessed the six transcendental powers, who are they? Who are these wise people given the labels of being wise people in our day? Are they really? When ordinary people see them, they all suppose that they are true arhats and speak of them as great bodhisattvas. Who are those people in our day? Those who, quote, give the appearance of abiding by the rules of monastic discipline, but scarcely ever read or recite the sutras, unquote, who are they? Who follow the constitution of their country and who just self-servingly say whatever they want in contradiction of their constitution? Who are those people in our environment? As we see from these passages of scripture, the Buddha Shakyamuni observed with his Buddha eye the situation that would prevail at the beginning of the latter day of the law. If in the present age there were no persons of the type that he described, then the world-honored one would be guilty of false and baseless talk. And if it were the case, who would put resolute mind and conviction in the theoretical and essential teachings of the Lotus Sutra and in the doctrine of the eternally inherent Buddha nature that was preached in the grove of salve trees? Who would put their life to it if everything he talked about wasn't verifiable in our day, in our current lives? If it wasn't verifiable, then why bother doing it? Right? Now, when in order to prove the truth of the Buddha's words, I read these sutra passages and apply them to this country of Japan, I interpret them as follows. So here's an example of what you and I can do. The passages about forest-dwelling monks who are living in deserted places refers to the teachers of Kenchoji, Jufukuji, Gokurakuji, Keninji, Tofukuji, and the other temples of the Zen precepts and Nembutsu schools in Japan. These diabolical temples have appeared in the world in order to bring destruction upon the Buddhist temples of the Lotus or Tendai school on the Hiei and in other places. Those who, quote, wear clothing of patched rags and give the appearance of abiding by the rules of monastic discipline are the present-day observers of the precepts with their surplices made from 5, 7, or 9 pieces of cloth. Those who are respected and revered by the world and spoken of as great bodhisattvas are men like Doryu, Ryokan, and Shioichi. The world that looks up to them refers to the ruler of the nation and others like him in our present age, and the ignorant people and ordinary people are all the people of Japan, both high and low. So, understand, when he says ignorant people or ordinary people, he's not saying they're stupid. He's using these words, or the translator is using these words, to indicate people who are simply unaware of the essential teachings of the Lotus Sutra. So these other teachers who say, the Lotus, who needs it? It's too difficult. It's for special people. It's not for you and I. They are actually enemies of the Lotus Sutra, aren't they? Because they're creating the largest obstacle possible. They're saying, here, I look like, smell like, act like an enlightened teacher. Let me teach you how to achieve Buddhahood, and they make it so that it's never attainable for you. Not in this life. Only the essential teachings of the Lotus Sutra drop the mic moment on your Buddhahood is now extant. It is just a matter of you changing your perception, working through your obstacles, your delusions, your veils, your curtains, whatever you want to call them, that lead you away, that make you miss the mark, and see then with clarity what it is that is the formations, the pre-formations of everything that you experience. Liberate yourself from this mire of attachments. Nichiren continues, because I am an ordinary person, I am unable to believe in the Buddha's teachings. But with regard to what I am saying here, I know the situation as well as one knows fire or water when it touches one's hand to it. Bad English. Once again, Nichiren saying, look, I'm just an ordinary guy, just like you and I. I know this is very hard to believe, but what I've just said to you, what I've just read to you, I know it to be true, real. I've experienced it in my own life. And the example I've just given you is I can see it all around us. Just as sure as if you stick your hand in fire, you feel fire, and you stick your hand in water, you feel water. It's just that obvious. Now he continues, according to the scripture, if a votary of the Lotus Sutra should appear, he will be cursed and reviled, attacked with swords and staves, and banished. In other words, he's going to meet with a lot of obstacles, especially in our day and age, in the latter day, of all of these negative influences all around us. Even like the example of food and drink for the monks. Look at the variety of sweets and gummy bears and everything else we have around us today. Try not partaking in any sweet. Look, I'm a diabetic. I know what it's like to try to avoid carbs. Oh my gosh, they're in everything. There have been more than one time when I just looked up in the air and thought, I guess I just can't eat anymore. I'm worried there's carbs in water. That's the nature of obstacles. Continuing, but if one applies this passage of the sutra to the world today, not a single person is found to whom it fits. Who then should be looked upon as the votary of the Lotus Sutra? Could it be that the enemies of the Lotus Sutra have made their appearance, but that no one exists who upholds the sutra? But that would be like saying that there is an east but no west, or like that heaven exists but earth does not. Were this the case, the words of the Buddha would be no more than lies, would they not? It may seem like self-praise on my part, but having pondered this, I will give credence to the words of the Buddha. I, the priest Nichiren, am the votary referred to in this scripture. So he's taking that mantle. He's not saying you can't. He's not saying you're superior to him. He's saying, look at my life. Look how I've dedicated myself to this teaching, this dharma, this practice. Can you equal it? Do so. Do so. And then the Buddha's words will be validating you as a votary of the Lotus Sutra. Do you see what he's saying? He's not trying to imply that he's superior, that he's authoritarian. He's saying, look, I'm a typical guy. I'm a normal human, but I've dedicated myself so thoroughly to this that it's no wonder that I'm experiencing these obstacles. Obstacles so large that you can see them. So give me some credit here. Stop doubting that that's what I'm doing. But he's not saying it's only me, not you. He's saying do the same. See, this isn't really given well in the translation, but this is Nichiren's example. He's saying, look, I'm trying to be an example of how to do this profoundly. So if you see me dealing with obstacles, don't doubt me. Just be prepared, because you yourself are taking on this path. And some of the obstacles that I, Nichiren, am facing are large enough that they will change the world around you and make those same obstacles lesser for you. Don't worship me. That's not the point in Buddhism. Understand how this works. It takes effort. That's all. Moreover, the Buddha, speaking of events of the past lifetime, says in the Never Disparaging chapter, quote, at this time there was a bodhisattva named Never Disparaging, dot, dot, dot. They spoke ill of him and cursed him, dot, dot, dot. Some among the group would take sticks of wood or tiles and stones and beat him and pelt him, end quote. In this way, Shakyamuni Buddha cited his own practice as a bodhisattva in the past to encourage and hearten the votary of the Lotus Sutra in the beginning of the latter day of the law. So there it is. He's telling you, I'm not the only one who came up with the idea that sharing this as an example for your own practice is a teaching, but Shakyamuni did it himself in the Lotus Sutra. Because in the expedient means, he came up with a story about a bodhisattva named Never Disparaging who was treated poorly and overcame it. And isn't this the same story over and over and over again? Just understand that whenever you take on any kind of goal of value in your life, what's the saying we humans use all the time? We use it often in athletics. No pain, no gain. It doesn't mean that you should launch yourself into pain so that you can gain. It means that when you have an admirable goal, that you want to excel at something, of course, it's not just sitting there in front of you for you to pick it up. It's a goal of attainment. And everything in Buddhism is about attaining awakening, attaining Buddhahood, attaining enlightenment. Of course, it's a lofty goal. Of course, driving yourself toward that goal will unveil those things that are keeping you from experiencing it. Right? So either the hardship buries you, or you see it as a badge. You see it as a lighthouse along the way that's saying, dang, you're going there. Just get through this. You can't get to the top of the stairs without walking up the stairs. and it's not easy. You keep doing it until it is easy. And then guess what? You're just there. You don't have to go up the stairs anymore. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. All right. I'm going to pause here. And we'll continue. Hopefully with the power plugged into my laptop. Another little obstacle I have to, like dropping books, that I have to overcome. Not a problem. Good to talk to you. It's been a few days. I've been going through my own fun stuff. So hopefully you're hanging in there. And we're getting this new year started out right. Or this new day or this new week. Deepen your practice. Support our Sangha if you can. Deep appreciation for your participation. However it is, whether it's just listening to these videos. What do they say? Oh yeah, don't forget to like, join this channel. Not sure how the bell works, but I think if you click the bell, whenever I post a video, you'll get a notification. And on that note, the podcasts are going really, really well. So thank you for that. Of course, there's no profit in it for me, other than knowing that I am doing my best to promulgate Nichiren's teachings and Buddhism's teachings in general. If there's enough support there just from viewership and watching and downloads, I'm looking forward to one day adding a mechanism, because through Podbean, I can, they don't support this channel or anything, but they do have a Patreon-like engine. And they have something else, like a fundraising engine or something. Anyway, those things also come at a cost, doesn't everything? So I'm looking forward to participating in that one day. I'm nowhere near it now, but it will come from your support. My money tree doesn't work, so I rely completely on the support you folks give me. And it has been wonderful. My computer keeps complaining. We all have masters to comply to, don't we? What a world. Anyway, thanks again. I'm going to let you go. See you in the next one. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Be good. Strengthen your practice. Chant every day. See you next time.